ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, September 24th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins as always. To start the show today, we're going to talk about the Montreal Impact once again in the news, and that's something very, very normal for the Montreal Impact to be in the news. Joining us from Pro Soccer USA, amongst other places, Tristan Amour. How you doing, Tristan, today?
Doing well.
Tristan, the last time we had you on, or I saw you, I think I was at a wedding, so this is a little less festive right now, a little less wine involved, although I wasn't drinking that night. Anyway, let's get to the topic at hand, though. The reason I invited you today wasn't just because the Canadian Championship is tomorrow or the fact that the Impact appear to be in free fall, which is also true, and all good reasons to have you on. But the other reason was Ballou. Ballou is a guy that came back from, of course, Barcelona, I guess, in theory, Barcelona B, where he wasn't really playing much and was on loan and wasn't really playing much. And then he came back to the Impact and everyone assumed, oh, good, now he'll finally get some playing time. No playing time. Can you maybe shed some light to those of us who aren't in Montreal of why this young man isn't playing and whether or not there's any hope that he might get some time soon?
Well, first of all, I guess it's the depth chart, and the depth chart being more full, if that's not a word, but anyway, fuller than it used to be. He came in at a time where the Impact were very slim at that position, and it just felt like it was going to happen. It felt like Ballou was going to come back, and I've been talking about it for a good year now. It made more sense for Ballou to come back to the Impact and play locally in MLS than to, you know, spend some time on the bench in the third division in Spain. Now, for the reason he didn't play, it was a tough transition for Ballou. He came in, new coach with Rémi Garde, had to adapt to the system. He wasn't, you know, from anyone who's from Montreal will know that Ballou wasn't the type of guy that Rémi was used to playing with. He's not the guy that tracks back, is very conscious defensively. So he had to adapt to that. And now he has to adapt to Wilmer Cabrera and his mentality. So it was a lot of change in very little time, and I feel like Ballou kind of missed the boat in terms of being relevant this year.
There was some suggestions that there might be some off-field stuff. Certainly some of the conversations that were happening yesterday at training suggested that maybe he approached Cabrera to talk about that. Do you think that, for lack of a better way to put it, that Ballou is mentally strong right now, that is mentally able to do the things that a professional needs to do to take that next step? Or do you feel that maybe he's regressed a little and is maybe just frustrated and sort of, you know, lack of maturity is showing here?
Well, look, we're talking about a young kid, a guy that left for Barcelona, which, you know, anyone, and like, I'm sure I would be the same way. If I had signed for Barcelona, you would find me, in the back of a Ferrari or something. You know, it's a lot to take in at that young age. So that's one thing. And then on another end, you've got the city of Montreal. We all know by now he apologized for off-field issues. So, I mean, you know, we don't know exactly what the issues are, but we live in Montreal. You know, it's a city that most Canadians know by now is a city that's very party-oriented, very going-out oriented. You can find a lot of you can have a lot of fun in this city. So is it that? I can't say for sure. However, one thing that's to me a bright spot is that he took that initiative to go and apologize to his head coach and Wilmer, you know, was talking about it yesterday. He was saying, well, I appreciated his professionalism, his intentions, and I love it. And that he ended that answer by saying, it's good for the club because we need him. So is that kind of a certain indication, you know, with a big, one of the biggest games in this franchise I've seen in the past few years coming tomorrow night? Are we seeing an approach to him maybe getting a few minutes there? At least, you know, I'm leaning towards yes, but at least there's something on the bright side for this young kid who, let's face it, as soon as, like, last year we were saying that guy had a bright future and everybody was excited when he committed to Canada. So don't give up on the guy just yet.
When we think about Ballou, and Dwayne alluded to it, but his confidence level is not nowhere where it was when he was at his peak 18 months ago or so. What is the key outside of just playing more for Ballou to get that confidence, Tristan?
It's a tough question, to be honest. And it's hard to answer that question in the right way because of the way that that the impact question marks are placed, right? We don't know who's the sporting director. We don't know who the head coach will be next year. In my mind, I think that Ballou should stay for a full year at the Impact on loan, and then to try and see out his career, to try and kickstart a career that's been on, you know, life support for like many months now. That guy just needs to be in a place where he's needed. He needs to be at a place where he can be in contention to be in the starting 11 every single game. And Montreal can offer that possibility. So to me, if I were Ballou or in his posse, I guess, I would probably vouch towards staying or to try and get another loan deal at the Impact. That's probably what I would do.
We have seen Ballou play you and I for a long time. If we go back to the FC Montreal days, Ballou has been an amazing player once confidence and freedom are part of his play. Is the system of the Montreal Impact now, or what the future will give to that system, we don't know because of, first of all, the technical director and then the identity of the club and then the head coach for next year will all have their words and their opinion to say about the future of how this team will play. But is the current system and the current way the Impact plays is conducive to Ballou being helpful to this team like Cabrera wants?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's so hard to answer that question, but in the realm of the right now, with three games left and Wilmer Cabrera at the helm, I think so. Because Wilmer has been saying time and time again that he likes to take risks. He likes to give younger players a chance to play. We saw it last weekend with Amar Saidic, who, you know, despite being a bit too passive for my liking, had a pretty positive MLS debut. So, yeah, I think so. I think that he can go into this team and offer a solid 30 minutes as of we're talking about right now. I mean, he can give a solid 30 minutes and push forward and help create offensively. So yeah, I haven't pulled the plug on this guy. Honestly, I don't think that I think he's in a rough patch. I think he definitely needs help, and I don't know where exactly to start. I think Dwayne, you had a great tweet earlier today saying that there needs to be a little more veteran presence. I feel like Rod Fanny is a good start. You know, I was at Mitrila this morning, the Impact training ground, and Rod Fanny was with Ballou, and they seem to have like a pretty good time. They seem to be talking quite extensively on their way to practice. So is that something that that needs to happen? I mean, that's a good start. So yeah, on the topic of Ballou, I think he definitely could help this team.
On the surface, this seems like a dumb question almost. I'm almost embarrassed to ask it, but I think maybe there is some relevance to it. was it a mistake to go to Barcelona? Do you think he should have maybe stayed back and the bright, the big eyes? And the, as you said, anyone would have jumped at anyone. I don't care who you are out there. I don't care how long-term your vision is. If Barcelona comes calling, you're running, right? But do you think it was a mistake in hindsight?
Well, let me tell you what my personal opinion on the Balu saga, or just the Balu, you know, how that happened. I think the Impact were really tried to make his progression as good as possible. They really took their time with Balu. They had him play with their USL affiliate. He played a full year there. Then he signed a homegrown deal. And I think what happened was they wanted a full year in order for him to develop and then try and cash in on him. The problem with it was, as we know, there was the appeal of the Ivory Coast and their national team. There was, you know, Didier Drogba was involved in there. There was, you know, his the people in his corner trying to push. At first, it was maybe trying to go to. There were rumors about him going to France, and I feel like he was influenced in a way where he had nothing else in his mind but to leave. And then you put Barcelona in this situation. It's one of those situations where you cannot say no. And when someone dangles Barcelona Football Club in front of you, you cannot refuse. You have to do whatever it takes in order to get there. Now, was that a mistake? Was it too late? I think so, but there were situations where in the past where, you know, players have gone to Europe from MLS, young players have gone to Europe and made it work. I don't remember his name exactly, but the young fullback out of Seattle who signed with Tottenham and came back to Seattle on loan for a year. That could have been an opportunity. But I think with Balu, it was, I need to leave right away, and there was almost no way of holding him back, which is unfortunate for the guy, and they ended up coming back later. And yeah, he's taking it was a step back, but hopefully he'll take a step forward with the Impact. The problem is he didn't play. He didn't show. It didn't seem like he showed Rémy that he was willing to adapt to his system. And then I know we now know what happened with him now under Wilmer Cabrera. So it's a bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's a tough situation.
Fair enough. And I think we all forget sometimes, as our teenagers, we're talking about both with Balu and Alphonso Davies, for that matter, who, of course, made an impromptu trip to France, who cost him quite a bit in the pocketbook and maybe even some playing time, too. So we all wish them well and hope that they can find some playing time very soon. But let's move away from Balu and talk about the Impact and another player that they, you know, on the very opposite side of the spectrum, that they're going to have to make a decision on in the offseason. I'm, of course, talking about Mr. Piatti. What is the right move on that? Gilmore has walked back on his claim earlier in this year that they're going to, you know, option or exercise his option. Do you think that they will do that? Do you think that they will move on? Do you think that they even know what they're going to do yet?
I don't think they know what they're going to do yet, for the simple reason that there is no sporting director. And Kevin Gilmore, the Impact president, has kind of tracked back a little bit on Twitter, saying that they're going to wait for the sporting director to be named, which according to many outlets is somewhat soon. Maybe even this week. We're still not sure. I'm still not sure. I'm asking the left and right, and I'm still not sure. But on the topic of Piatti, the person coming in as a sporting director is hopefully going to look back at how this team has been operating and how this team has been doing in at least the past 5 years. And there is no way you can look at this team and not acknowledge Ignacio Piatti's importance and what he's been proving to this team time and time again. He is, in the MLS era, the most important player in this franchise. I don't care what you say about Didier Drogba. He only stayed there for a year. Ignacio Piatti, good times, bad times, lukewarm times, he's been there. He's been there. He was scoring goals. I literally told TSN 690 last week that he's still top five in the league, in my opinion. The guy can prove it. When he's healthy, he's the best. He's the best player in this team by far. And if you're adding a guy like Bojan on a two-year deal, why not take a chance and try and sign him or pick up the option and have Bojan and Piatti playing a full year together? I feel like this is a good start. Now, is he paid a lot? Yes, he's paid a lot because he's top five in the league. That's just the way it goes. Now, are you willing to invest around these two guys? Well, that's the question. That's my main question. If they're not ready to if Joey Saputo's not ready to pull up his wallet and throw the big bucks on the table, well, maybe Piatti's not there next year. But in my mind, if you want to continue and be a force in this league, you got to build around those guys and add more money to the pile. Look at what TFC's been doing. They spend the big bucks on the DPs, and then they spend intelligently around them. And we know they won MLS Cup. They went to the CONCACAF Champions League final. The Impact needs to follow through on this.
And last week, there was a rumor that coming out of Italy that the Impact might be willing to have a big off-season and make a splash. So this combined with Piatti and Bojan and maybe a striker worth of the term, at least in the goal-scoring column, maybe the Impact will have a resurgence. But for this year, tomorrow night, the Canadian Championship, it's where it all stands. The Montreal Impact has a chance to win a trophy, Trista. And today, the last training before traveling to Toronto, well, there was some good news. We saw Samuel Piette taking part of full training. What else can you tell us? And what can you tell us about Samuel Piette as well that happened today at training?
Oh, man, Samuel Piette, we spoke to him earlier today. Samuel Piette looks like a guy that wants to win a trophy. It's his first professional final. It's quite surprising. When he told me that last week, it didn't cross my mind that this guy's only 24 and you know, played in the lower divisions in Europe, so there's no way he was in a final. But, yeah, so he's in a final, winning a Canadian to try and win the Voyagers Cup, the Canadian Cup, and to potentially make to have the first decima in Canada, because if they do win, the Impact are winning their 10th Voyagers Cup in the full era of that cup, of that trophy. So definitely something that to watch out. He's a man on a mission. But from training, everyone, from the few, because we interesting tidbit, if you're not in the media world, Before the games, media is only allowed 15 minutes of the training. We need to leave after that. So from the first 15 minutes I've seen, everybody was there. Bojan was practicing. Everybody was with the squad. No one was practicing away from the squad. So it's looking good on the Impact front. So, you know, Piatti is there. Bojan was there. Urruti was there. Piette was there despite missing yesterday's training. So on that front, everybody looks like they're ready to go.
Tristan, thank you very much for your time today. And before we say goodbye, can you tell us what our listeners can find on Pro Soccer USA's coverage of the Montreal Impact, written by yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm there as much as I possibly can for Pro Soccer USA. You can find them at Pro Soccer USA, COM. You can find me at Tristan Damour with an S at the end there on Twitter. I cannot stress, Pro Soccer USA is a great publication. We're doing really good stuff, and I'm really glad to be writing for them.
And thank you again for your time today. We'll be right back after this very short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins. As always, Dwayne, yesterday the FIFA Football Awards happened. And, you know, it was, of course, a little surprising. Lionel Messi won the best FIFA player men for 2018-19 season. We also had Megan Rapinoe winning the best woman player in the world for the 2018-19 season. How did you enjoy this gala before we start talking about the real important thing that happened in that gala?
I enjoyed it on Twitter, the way that most people enjoy things nowadays, with the reaction they're in terms of tracking the stream down. Not going to say that I did that. I was doing an article for Canadian Soccer News instead. But certainly Messi, I was glad to see that. He, to me, 50 goals scored last year, was the best male player. And I'm glad they didn't get too cute. Rapinoe, look, she was the most impactful female footballer maybe in history last year. Was she the best player? No. Wasn't even the best player on her team. But she was the most impactful player overall. And we were still at a point in the women's game where that matters a lot. Drawing eyeballs, drawing attention, all that sort of stuff. So I get why she won. And I don't, despite the fact that I, you know, flippantly tweeted out that she wasn't even the best U.S. women's national team player, but at least Maria didn't win, which, you know, I do mean that flippant joke on some level. I also don't really take too much offense in her winning. It was pretty clear that she had the greatest impact in the game this year, and that matters too. She's at the end of her career, so this is an opportunity for her to go out on a high. I suspect she'll probably stick around for the Olympics, but nonetheless, it was... I'm dancing around it. I don't want to say it's completely deserved because I do ultimately believe that and it does frustrate me that the women's awards and these things is often a popularity contest rather than an actual evaluation of the play. And it usually goes to the most famous woman rather than the best woman. And I think that that's a problem and it's a symptom of how we pay less attention to the women's game. But in this particular case, despite the fact it does represent that kind of a ruling, I think that you can make this one an argument that in this one case, it does actually make sense too. So I'm ambivalent basically when it comes to whether it's the right call or not, but as I said, at least it wasn't Marta or something like that. It was at least a player that makes sense for once, which means that we have some progress.
Yeah, no, of course. And you know what you're saying does make sense as well when we listen to her speech. And let's listen together to the last two minutes of the speech that she gave after receiving the award. And, you know, she talks a lot about a great important stuff. And let's just listen to it. And when we come back, we can talk a little bit about how impactful, truly, this speech might have been.
But I was going to say some of the stories that have inspired me most this year. You know, Raheem Sterling and Koulibaly, they're incredible performances on the field, but the way that they've taken on the disgusting racism that they have to face this year, but probably for their whole lives. The young Iranian woman who eventually set herself on fire because she wasn't able to go to the game. The one out MLS player, Mr. Martin, and the countless other female out LGBTQ players who fight so hard every day to A, just play the sport that they love, but B, also to fight the rampant homophobia that we have. Those are all the stories that inspire me so much, but they also admittedly make me a little bit sad and a little bit disappointed. I feel like if we really want to have meaningful change, what I think is most inspiring would be if everybody other than Raheem Sterling and Koulibaly, if they were as outraged about racism as they were, if everybody else was that, if everybody was as outraged about homophobia as the LGBTQ players, as if everybody was as outraged about equal pay or the lack thereof or the lack of investment in the women's game other than just women, that would be the most inspiring thing to me. I feel like that's my ask of everybody. We have such an incredible opportunity being professional football players. We have so much success, financial and otherwise. We have incredible platforms. I ask everyone here, because I think everyone in this room probably, you know, has that crown that they're bearing, Lend your platform to other people. Lift other people up. Share your success. We have a unique opportunity in football different to any other sport in the world to use this beautiful game to actually change the world for better. So that's my charge to everyone. I hope you take that to heart and just do something, do anything. We have incredible power in this room. So thank you so much. It is an absolute honor. Have a good night.
There was absolute incredible power in that room. When you look at who was the who's who of the world of football was in that room. And during the speech, Dwayne, you could see Jurgen Klopp being fascinated and listening to every word coming out of her mouth. And that's just one of the example of who was in that room listening. And my question to you, I don't want to necessarily know your opinion, what she said, but could that speech change something? Could that speech have inspired someone in that room to truly help what seems to be now a true momentum coming out of the France 2019 World Cup? Could that momentum be parlayed with someone acting who was sitting in the room yesterday, who was motivated and maybe motivated enough to change things?
My cynical instinct is to say, no, a speech isn't probably going to change things. But then I take a step back and I realize there have been some very famous speeches in the history of the world that have changed things. Martin Luther King, for instance, right? So maybe. I mean, I'm not about to prepare a sports person making a speech at a sports gala with, you know, like the civil rights movement of the 1960s. That's not my intent with that comparison. But there is the possibility of Megan Rapinoe's words changing or slightly shifting the opinion of one person at a time. And that's, I think, the power of speech, the power of messaging like that. You are not going to make systemic change through words alone. And I think the activists themselves, and I believe Rapinoe would consider herself an activist as much as a player at this point in her life, would agree with that. But what you can do is you can shift attitudes a little bit at a time. And certainly that is that those words were very measured and very logical and very powerful in that way. And you have to applaud her for that. And I do like the analogy that she made. They made her hopeful and sad at the same time. And I agree with that. That's how I think about these issues. I'm hopeful that people are stepping out. And I'm glad that she used Raheem Sterling as a comparison. It's someone I've talked about on this show before, and how, you know, a lot of the stuff he deals with is on the dog whistle side of things, and he calls it out, and he gets called out even further by the idiots for that, and he stays up to them and backs it up on the field, just as she did clearly as well. So that's a valuable message to have, and I think it's valuable that she crossed genders and crossed different communities and all that sort of stuff so that it wasn't siloed. The world is too siloed right now, right? And there are some probably that hear that speech and think that this is further doing that, that she's politicizing it. But human dignity is not a political story. It isn't. You know, whether you believe in this type of taxation is, human dignity should not be. And that is what she's talking about, the rights of humans to exist at the same level and the same abilities and the same sort of abilities with the same sort of possibilities as everyone else just by virtue of being born. That is what we should all want, whether we're conservative or liberal. And I think that she sort of alluded to that in that speech. So yeah, they were good words. And can they change things? Not all at once, but a little bit by a little bit by a little bit is how change happens.
Hopefully, this will be just a continuation of great moment happening for the game. And I think one thing that Gianni Infantino said before the announcement of Megan Rapinoe's best award is that one thing you and I said for a while, it's not women football. It's football. It's just played by women. And I think that's hopefully the beginning of a certain shift in how things are seen, how things are portrayed, which will lead to how things are eventually more popular, because that's where it starts. Now, it's Tuesday. It's the end of the show. Let's talk a little quickly, Dwayne, about Europe. What was your game this weekend that really got your attention?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit homerish here and talk about the 8-0. Not because there's anything brilliant about it. Not because Watford is bizarrely bad against City, even though everyone is.
Against everyone, though, Watford and Wolves right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's what does this mean? And there's been so much conversation about that game and whether it is telling about the Premier League losing its sort of ability to be compelling. And we had this conversation last week as well. I watched that game, and everyone knows, and I'm going to be a little partisan here for the rest of the conversation simply because I think it's relevant to what I'm trying to point out. Because as a partisan, I watch that game, and I'm entertained by those goals. And I'm entertained by watching my team, quote-unquote, like I'm wearing the strip out there, my team roll up the score and have some fun, and, you know, looking up the records. Oh, can they beat 9-0? Can they do this? It is entertaining to those fans.
Can they get the United record, right? Because it's a Manchester United record of 9-0 in 1995.
I'm just trying to help poor Craig Forrest out, okay? Come on. we as Canadians should want him out of that record book, but at any rate.
It was against Forrest, right? It was nothing in Forrest, so it was City against...
No, it was Ipswich.
Okay, yeah, so it was...
Craig Forrest was in goal, so anyway. Look, I don't know, like... I believe in, and this is a debate I have internally and externally on the show all the time, it's whether or not the European model, where you have these clubs that are way above others and they can do really special things, is better off than the North American model, where you have a lot of teams that are about the same. And it's a debate we've been having for years, and my preference is well known. I do actually prefer it when there are excellent teams. And I do think that even though City and Liverpool look untouchable right now, Pep's going to move on in a couple years. David Silva is going to retire next, not retire, but he's going to go to Miami, so retire next year. I say this on my MLS show.
But don't, well, that's what happens. You go to Florida, right? You go to Florida after, it's time retirement. All right.
Yeah, Aguero's only got a couple years left. You know, they don't have anybody at the back line. The City, as much as this has been really insane and incredible and enjoyable from a partisan perspective the last couple of years, they're not going to be up there forever. I think they have the wealth to be close to it. But even that crashes. Look at United right now. And I'm not saying United, I'm not trying to be partisan now. United, no one would argue, is anywhere close to where they were under Ferguson anymore. They are not a dominant team. No one, they are not a first choice destination. They are not even the third best team. They're maybe the third best team in their greater region, you know, if you include Liverpool and Manchester, kind of bulked together as in the Northwest. So it's not the same. And for there was a while, there were times when no one ever could have imagined Manchester United losing 2-0 and looking terrible against West Ham. And that being like, you know, a conversation, not because of, oh my God, what a shock, but oh my God, why it's such a shock that it isn't a shock. You know, things change. So I prefer excellence. That's why I prefer excellence, because there will be another excellent team down the line. Liverpool and City right now, enjoy the excellence that we have on display as a neutral. Enjoy the 1-2 battle, because it's going to come down to that. I don't think Liverpool is going to go perfect. So if they do cat tip to them, it's going to be a hell of a title race. And don't get too worked up on the occasional blowout here and there, because these are special teams that are playing against teams that are just looking to survive the day.
You talked about excellence and how things change. Granada 2, Barcelona 0. Barcelona is having their worst beginning of the season in decades. And the league is weird. It's having a weird beginning of the season. Madrid struggling too. Real Madrid. So you're seeing quite an open race for La Liga until they fix things in Barcelona. But yeah, Barcelona surprisingly losing this weekend. And of course, there's games today in Ligue 1 in France. You've seen on your screens just a couple minutes ago the games today. Games in La Liga and games in Serie A today. But Granada 2, Barcelona 0 is my surprise result of the weekend.
Yeah, and Barca in general, their slow start has been a topic of worldwide conversation and consternation if you're a Barca fan. And I, just as I just talked about Liverpool and City now, you know, looking like they're unbeatable at the top. Well, Barcelona and Real Madrid look like they would never be lodged from the top of that battle either. And I'm not going to suggest that this is going to last long, just as it will never last long in the Premier League now with the money involved. But it does show that you can have outliers occasionally. Did anyone have Bale? No, come on. And they're not going to stay there. And Atleti, is looking at this with eyes wide open right now and kind of frustrated that they haven't taken full advantage. But things are secular. And, you know, I think the question when you're getting down to Barcelona, and this is worth a longer conversation than we have time for today, is really what does this mean for the future of that generation? And when is it time to move on from some of their long-time players? And the most obvious one of all is, of course, Mr. Messi. And what is his next chapter? Does he want to play out the string there? And he's increasingly looking more and more frustrated and verbalizing that and suggested that he can walk away on a free at the end of this year, which, if that is true, is going to be one hell of a story to follow.
Can you even imagine a guy who might be worth $200 to $300 million a euro on a transfer, just like, no, I'm just going to leave on a free. No. That would be the worst business move in the history of sports by Barcelona. If you lose Messi on a free transfer and get nothing from his departure, that would be the worst move ever, I think.
And that's why people are having trouble believing, but there are lots of credible people that are suggesting that there is a clause in his contract that will allow that. And if that is the case, whoever negotiated that needs to be fired immediately.
If they are not already, they need to be fired already. No, for sure. And that was that could be surprising. But we'll keep an eye on Barcelona and we'll see if they fix things or maybe if the Champions League is their saving grace, because the hole they're in right now might be too big for them to conquer La Liga, depending on other teams in the league. We'll see if that happens. Last game I want to talk about before we wrap the show for today, Dwayne, this weekend was the Derby della Madonnina in Milan. AC Milan versus Inter Milan. Inter winning at the San Siro 2-0 versus their rival.
Yeah, it wasn't the most entertaining to give. It was almost a cliched, stereotypical Serie A game, even though Serie A, if you watch it a lot, is actually quite entertaining. But the stereotypes are it is not, and this one was not the most entertaining dub derby games between the two old rivals. I think it reflected and does reflect where Inter is versus AC Milan right now in terms of their standing. And I think AC Milan is starting to turn it around. Everyone knows the ownership issues that they had there for years, recent years, and how that has dragged that club down into depths that it never imagined it was possible. In many ways, I view Milan and Manchester United very similar, that they were two clubs that you could never, ever have imagined being this low. And it's all relative what I mean when I say this low. But both seem like it's going to be a big crawl to get out of the hole that they've created. Because I mean, AC Milan was the best team in Europe, the best club in Europe year after year. When I really started to follow club football, to see them where they are over the past few years is remarkable.
Not even 10 years ago, Dwayne. 2011, 2012. Wasn't it when they won the Champions League? Nesta, and you had the Beckham. Well, Beckham doesn't really count, but you know what I mean? Like, they had the Ronaldinho years, mid-2000 up to the beginning of the 2010s to 2012. They were a force to be reckoned with in Europe. And then, yeah, thank you, Berlusconi.
Yeah, well, and certainly the knots that they were a massive club then. Yeah, mismanagement. And look, we can have a conversation about this on another week when it's a little slower. But yeah, ownership. And there's a great Athletic article about the Glazers in Manchester United by Oliver Kay that you should look up if you're interested in this type of stuff. But ownership matters. And ownership drove AC Milan into the ground. And ownership, they're not driving the Manchester United in the ground, but they're stuck in this purgatory of like shareholder doom right now. As long as they're making money, there's no impetus to change there. And these are all issues that you have to think about and consider when you're looking at the European model. And it's an interesting sort of paradigm shift that's happening, I think, in the world right now, in the football world. And it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I think we're entering not to be overly dramatic about it, because you can never really draw straight lines in these things. But it seems to me over the past couple years, and we're kind of in the middle of it. There has been a shift to the next era of clubs and whoever those great clubs are going to be, and they may not be the exact same they were the previous time.
Yep, and that might be a conversation for another day as well. But for today, we will wrap things up. We want to thank Tristan Amoll once again, who appeared on today's show. You can find Tristan on Twitter at Tristan D'Amour, and you can find his work on Pro Soccer USA, amongst other places. Of course, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of The World of Football with a Soccer Perspective. Later today, we'll record the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. Dwayne and I will talk about Canadian soccer, Canadian Premier League, the Canadian Championship, and more on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, our premium show available for patrons only. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast 4 times a month, once a week, and that is available at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. And until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne Wallens, I'm Kevin Larame, and we wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.